This episode is brought to you by Infosys Public Services, a leader in next-generation digital solutions and consulting for the DMV. Learn more at infosyspublicservices.com/DMV. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AnvaCast. As we get ready for the holiday season, we're going to have a conversation today with one of the nation's top experts on impaired driving, because this is a time of year where we see some troubling trends and behaviors, and we're going to talk about what that means. I'm pleased to welcome a friend of mine in the transportation field for many years, Robert Ritter, who is with the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration. More specifically, he is the director of the Office of Impaired Driving and Occupant Protection. Rob, welcome to your first appearance on the AnvaCast.
Ian, I really appreciate the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I mentioned it in the introduction. We're entering the holiday season. We know for many years, NHTSA and other safety-minded organizations always try to really up the ante and the awareness of impaired driving, particularly this time of year. Why is that? What is it about the holiday season and impaired driving that becomes a particularly dangerous mix?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it is, but we definitely see more people and more impaired drivers and impaired driving fatalities on the roads at this time of year than almost any other time of year. As Ian, I think you know, and your listeners probably know, about a third of all traffic crashes in the U.S. involve drunk drivers. So we're talking about in 2018, more than 10,000 fatalities, or about 29% of all the fatalities. And in December of 2018, that's our latest data, we saw 839 people lost their lives in traffic crashes. The Christmas and New Year's holiday periods are some of the most dangerous for impaired driving related fatalities, more than any other holiday period. So we know that this happens. And so, as you said, we do try to make sure that we are upping our communications and sharing the important messages to get a sober ride and not get behind the wheel if you are impaired by alcohol or other drugs.
Now, certainly that is in a usual year that's contributed to holiday parties, social gatherings, whether it's, you know, at someone's house or at a event facility. Obviously, everybody knows this is not a normal year. So is that a way to maybe be optimistic that there won't be as many of those gatherings, that people will be on the road? Or is that, you know, Ian, you know, always the optimist, being a little naive, that it might help the situation?
We're hoping that people stay home and don't gather because of COVID, because of the pandemic, and people need to be very careful associated with that. But we're not seeing a decrease in impaired driving related fatalities as a result of the pandemic. And so I suspect that your optimism is unfortunately misplaced, because what we've been seeing throughout 2020 is not what we would have expected in similar circumstances historically. And so NHTSA's, we've been looking at the 2020 data to try to understand what's happening. And we've looked at our first and second quarter of 2020. That's the data that we've had and been able to analyze thus far. And while the fatalities are down, vehicle miles traveled are also down. People are not traveling and not driving as much as they have in the past, but vehicle miles traveled are down a lot more than fatalities are down. And so the fatality rate, that's another measure we use to understand the safety on our roadways, the number of fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled. That fatality rate is up, and it's up significantly. And the first quarter of 2020, it was 1.1. In the second quarter of 2020, it was 1.42. And so we are seeing increases in alcohol sales. We're seeing increases in states that have legalized marijuana. We're seeing increases in marijuana sales. And so we're not seeing the decrease in impaired driving that we've seen in other and historically seen when there's been a recession or an economic downturn. That's not happening, and it hasn't happened in the first two quarters of 2020, and I suspect it won't happen in December in this holiday period. So people really need to be vigilant. They need to be careful. If they're enjoying and drinking at home, that's fine. That's great. And have a happy holiday, but don't get behind the wheel.
And you mentioned early at the outset that if you are going to do that, if you are going to go out and enjoy some alcoholic beverages, to make sure you arrange a sober ride.
Absolutely.
For those that maybe, you know, talk a little more about that. What are some of the options we should be reminding our friends and neighbors and, you know, and honestly, the folks in our lives that aren't as integrated into transportation safety the way so many of our listeners are, how could they help spread the word with those basic tips about, you know, obviously for years, folks have talked about designated drivers, and that's certainly still something on the list, but it's grown to be a little bit, it's grown to be more than just a designated driver.
So there's lots of opportunities, Ian. Like you said, I think that the same techniques and tools that have always been available to us are still available. So, get a sober driver. Make sure that you have a plan if you're going to drink. There are ride-sharing services available. There are taxi services available. And I know everyone is less comfortable being in a close space with other people. But you need to protect yourself, and it is not safe for you, and it's not safe for your neighbors and others on the road. Your family wants to see you get home safely, and that means finding someone who is sober and capable to drive you home if you've been drinking or using other drugs.
So, Rob, that's the second time you've mentioned the other drug piece, and you mentioned it both in reference to, of course, the holiday season, but just even during this time of the pandemic, crashes and fatalities are not down as much as one would think they should be based on folks not traveling as much. But you keep adding in the other drugs. Let's talk a little bit about how impaired driving is becoming a more complicated and bigger challenge than just drunk driving. And I don't say just drunk driving to minimize it. We know that it's still a third of the crashes. But we're seeing an increasing troubling trend in terms of the impact of other substances. Talk about what that means. And it's not just marijuana.
Right. And I think you framed the question perfectly. Alcohol is a significant issue. We know the numbers with alcohol. We know more than 10,000 people every year lose their lives in fatal crashes, in drunk driving related fatal crashes. And that is an issue we need to continue to focus on, and we need people to be aware of and to get the sober ride and not get behind the wheel impaired by alcohol. But we are seeing more prevalence of other drugs in drivers as well. And so that's an issue that NHTSA has been looking at for many years and doing a lot of research and work on, trying to help to educate the public and decision makers about the dangers of using other drugs that can also impair driving related skills. And we are starting to see some increases in the prevalence of use of other drugs in drivers. That's something that we are trying to raise awareness of and talk more about and do more research and understand the impact. Science has clearly demonstrated the connection between the concentration and use of alcohol and the impact on driving-related skills and crash risk. We can very clearly identify what happens when someone drinks, what happens when their blood alcohol concentration reaches certain levels, and how that impacts their driving-related skills and their crash risk. That connection between the concentration and use of alcohol and crash risk, it's a much more difficult challenge to establish that connection for the use in other drugs. And so whether we're talking about marijuana legalization or the opioid crisis or over-the-counter and legal drugs that people use, some of the things that your doctor prescribes to help you function and feel better or heal may impact your driving-related skills. And people need to be aware that taking those drugs can be driving impairment drugs, and you need to find a safe way to move around, even if you're using drugs that your doctor prescribes. But there are many out there. We're doing a lot of research to understand the connection and the impact of those drugs on driving related skills and on crash risk, and trying to make that connection. We don't have a specific sort of level of a particular drug and the driving and crash risk that we do have with alcohol. So folks need to be even more careful. If you are using drugs and you need to make sure that you're sober and you're capable before you get behind the wheel. Law enforcement officers can identify through observation the signs and symptoms of impairment. They will pull you over, they will stop you, and you can be arrested and prosecuted for impaired driving, even if you're not using alcohol. They can identify those signs and symptoms. They'll stop you to keep everyone safe, and arrest and prosecute for other drugs that impair driving skills as well.
And I imagine in terms of educating the public and making folks aware, marijuana must be an increasing challenge in that realm, especially as we look at just a couple of weeks ago, we see every marijuana-related ballot that was up for voters was approved. None of them were declined. So any place that had the opportunity for voters to approve legalization of marijuana, it's being approved, which implies a level of safety and acceptance. And so when you don't have the data to say how much of this puts you on the risk of the road, many people are, I guess, filling the void of assuming the best and not the worst.
And that's a big concern from a traffic safety perspective. Absolutely. As you said, states are legalizing or decriminalizing marijuana. And I think there is that assumption that if it's legal, that means it's safe. And when it comes to driving, that's not necessarily the case. We do know from studies that marijuana can negatively affect skills associated with driving. And marijuana can slow your reaction time. It can impair your coordination. It can distort perception. We have studies to demonstrate that folks who are using marijuana have difficulty maintaining their position within a lane when you're driving. So we know that it has an impact, what we aren't able to identify at this point is a specific amount or level in a specific person, and what that impact that has on driving skills, which is why we rely on our law enforcement partners to identify an impaired driver who's operating on the road. But at that point, they're already putting themselves and their community at danger. And so we really implore people to think about when you're using any of these substances, legal or not, what impact it has on you and whether or not you can safely operate that vehicle. And if you can't, stay home. Or find a sober ride. At this point, we talked about the holiday season a little bit, and I do want to raise that we do have a what we call a high visibility enforcement campaign every year at this time of year. Starting December 16th this year, we will be working with law enforcement partners all across the country. We'll be sharing the Drive Sober, Get Pulled Over message, and they will be out and increasing their presence in communities to identify and stop and impair drivers. So that's the Drive Sober, Get Pulled Over associated more with alcohol. But it's also combined with our "If you feel different, you drive different, drive high, get a DUI" messaging. And that's important messages we try to educate consumers and the public on what impact that any of these drugs might have on you. If they make you feel different, they may very well be making you drive different. You have to be really careful.
That's fantastic. And then when you talk about high visibility enforcement, are you talking about checkpoints, or are there other tactical implementations of that high visibility enforcement?
So that's up to the local communities to determine. And so some states maybe, and law enforcement agencies may be doing checkpoints. Others may be doing saturation patrols. They may have more officers out on the road. They may have officers more dedicated to traffic safety enforcement and looking for impaired drivers in a more concentrated way than they do on a regular day. So there's a lot of different ways that law enforcement agencies are participating in the high visibility enforcement campaign. Our messaging is out. We want to make sure people are aware and thinking about this, particularly during the holiday season. And officers are out in a variety of different ways looking to identify impaired drivers and take them off the road.
Now, how much of it is a challenge for enforcement? Certainly they can get them off of the road right there based on the way they're behaving. But in terms of sanctions that can make behavior correction, the lack of that data that ties specific amount of a drug in your system to impairment, it's a challenge, I'd imagine, for the enforcement and for the courts. When we don't have something as black and white as, say, a breathalyzer, where you blow 0.08 or higher, boom, clearly you are in violation and there's a process in place. With, say, marijuana or even prescription drugs, outside of the officer's observation of the behavior, which, like you said, could get them off the road immediately, which for safety purposes is critical because that's what's going to keep somebody alive. But in terms of a sanction that helps the behavior correction, where's the conversation happening in the enforcement and judicial community to create something similar to that breathalyzer 0.08 standard?
Impaired driving is illegal in all 50 states. It doesn't matter what substance is causing the impairment. Impaired driving is illegal, and people can be stopped. They can be arrested, prosecuted, and convicted for impaired driving. And a lot of those cases are based on the officer's observation of the driving task and of the driver. And so the officers will identify an impaired driver based on the signs and symptoms they see in the vehicle, and then they'll talk to the driver at the side of the road and try to identify what's causing the impaired driving signs that they saw. And based on that, the officer's investigation, what they saw and what they found in conducting roadside sobriety tests and interviews with the driver, they can then provide that information to the prosecutor, and we have successful convictions of impaired driving all across the country. The question of a breathalyzer for drugs is a more difficult and complicated question. But first and foremost, we do not need a breathalyzer, and we do not need a specific limit for a concentration of a drug in order to identify impaired drivers or to arrest and convict an impaired driver. NHTSA supports training for law enforcement officers across the country to help identify impaired drivers. All officers are trained in the standardized field sobriety testing, or SFST. But to identify and arrest drug-impaired drivers, NHTSA works with the International Association of Chiefs of Police on a specialized training program called the Drug Recognition Experts. These specialized trained officers follow a proven, systematic, standardized 12-step process that allows them to determine whether a suspect is impaired by drugs, and if so, by what drug category or categories. There are close to 10,000 DREs across the country, and they are among the best tools we have to keep drug-impaired drivers off our roads. But DREs can't be everywhere, so NHTSA also works with IACP and law enforcement agencies to supplement the SFST training with Advanced Roadside Impaired Driving Enforcement Training, or ARIDE. And ARIDE bridges that gap between the SFSTs and the rigorous DRE training. It provides information about drug impairment, reinforces officer skills to observe, identify, and articulate the signs of impairment related to drugs, alcohol, or a combination of both. So ARIDE training is available to a lot more officers than simply DREs, and allows those officers to identify when they need to call in a DRE for that expert evaluation of a suspect. Bottom line, yeah, officers can identify impaired drivers. They will stop them, they will investigate, and they will arrest drivers who are impaired by alcohol or drugs.
And, you know, it brings up a conversation you and I have had offline in the past, Rob, this idea that there's somehow different tolerance for the way you're impaired. And what we're getting at, which you said in your answer there, and I think it's worth repeating, if you're impaired and can't drive, you're impaired and can't drive. It really shouldn't matter as to what that is, whether it's alcohol, drugs, or even, you know, you didn't sleep and you're a drowsy driver. You're still not capable of operating safely.
That's right. And, you know, from my perspective and from NHTSA, we want to ensure that the roadway environment is safe and that every driver behind the wheel is capable of managing that responsibility and being safe and protecting themselves and protecting their community and not ending up in a tragic situation. And so, as you said, there are any number of things that could impair a driver, whether that's alcohol or drugs or drowsy or looking at your cell phone. And so we at NHTSA want to work to prevent any of those situations and circumstances behind the wheel so that people are focusing on the driving task, capable of the driving task, and can safely get from wherever they are to wherever they need to be. And so it's really important that people understand that driving is risky and that they need to be in control and focused whenever they're driving.
And you mentioned the opioid crisis a little bit earlier, and I just wanted to double back to that. There's a lot happening in that space throughout the country, throughout the world, in terms of the dependency on these types of medicine. What are the trends you're seeing in terms of the opioid crisis and the work? What's the work NHTSA is doing, I guess, maybe with the medical community to better inform patients in terms of, you know, how to understand those risks?
Yeah, it's a good question, Ian. We are trying to get information out across all channels and to as many different stakeholders as we can to address this issue. So we are certainly trying to provide information to the medical community about the dangers that opioids present potentially to driving skills. Same with marijuana and alcohol. And we try to share that information based on the research that we know and different training partners that we have that can work with the medical community and with doctors and with nurses to share that information. So we want to make sure that there are trusted partners who are talking to patients, talking to people who have substance use disorders, who can help to explain that these substances can have impacts all across their lives, but particularly on driving and driving skills.
So the theme of driving and driving skills, obviously our listeners are primarily from the motor vehicle and law enforcement communities. We've talked a lot about the law enforcement role. We haven't talked so much about the role of the driver licensing agency in some of these issues. Is there anything that you and NHTSA want to take the opportunity to remind those in the driver licensing business or anything else that they can do as safety partners to help with these initiatives?
Yeah, they're important partners, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to everyone. First of all, I think sharing information and communicating and providing these messages to the people who are using the system, to the drivers, is really important. So any help that you can get, that we can get in sharing messages and explaining the need to be careful and to understand that there are impacts of using these substances on driving, is really helpful. The other piece is particularly in states that have administrative sanctions, that's a really important that the Motor Vehicle Association community is helping to ensure that those sanctions are appropriately applied. And so when someone is pulled over, identified, if there is an administrative sanction that's possible or required in a particular state for someone who is suspected of impaired driving, we need to ensure that is appropriately applied and that all the entire term of those sanctions are conducted so that people can get the help that they need, but those who aren't safe to drivers are kept off the road.
Well, Rob, you know, your appearance here on the AmvaCast is great to connect you with our community. We've not really had the opportunity for you to come to one of our conferences, really talk to the DMV community directly. So we always like to let people know a little bit about the person we're talking to. You are in this role, but you've been with the DOT and in the safety community for most of your career, correct?
That's right. I've had the privilege of working in transportation my entire career and spent 15 years with the Federal Highway Administration before I came over to this position at NHTSA.
And how long ago was that when you moved over to NHTSA?
I joined NHTSA about 2 years ago as the director of the Office of Impaired Driving and Occupant Protection. I had devoted a lot of my career to traffic safety and worked in the Office of Safety at Federal Highway. So I've been working on transportation safety and traffic safety issues for over a decade at this point.
So the first part was more on the infrastructure side at Federal Highways, and now moving to the behavioral side at NHTSA, if you will.
That's right. That's exactly right. But it's a system. And really, it's all of us working together to provide for safe roads and safe users of those roads and safe vehicles. It's all of those pieces that we need to apply together, work together and coordinate. And if we're going to get to zero fatalities across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess those safe vehicles ties into the other part of your title that maybe we'll have you back on a future episode to talk about occupant protection, a whole other category of an important safety element when you're in the vehicle.
Absolutely. It gives me the opportunity, Ian, I appreciate it, to remind everyone to buckle up. Yeah. Buckle up every ride, every time, wherever you are in the vehicle. It's the most important thing you can do to protect yourself if something goes wrong. But we also want you to be sober to prevent anything from going wrong as much as possible.
Absolutely. You need to do all those things and more to keep yourself safe, keep your family safe, and keep the people you don't know on the road safe.
That's right. Yeah. The impacts of impaired driving are not just on you. The impacts are on your family, on your neighbors, on your community. While a lot of these crashes are single vehicle crashes, in far too many circumstances, impaired drivers are killing others who are innocent people on the roads because of mistakes that they made and getting behind the wheel impaired.
Absolutely. They're all tragedies, every single one of them. Well, Rob, I really appreciate you taking the time to come and chat with us on the AmvaCast. Like I said, maybe we'll have you back again to talk about some of these other safety topics. Want to thank everybody for listening today. Want to thank our producer, Claire Jeffrey, and we'll see you all on the next episode of the AmvaCast. Stay well, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for AmvaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman. Produced by Claire Jeffrey. Music by Gibson Arthur. This episode was brought to you by Infosys Public Services. Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.